You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Side Community News, and today we're talking about the Pacers-Hornets game. We're talking about Domantas Sabonis because he was dominant in that game. And we're talking about this weekend's games. Pacers take on the Wizards and the Heat this weekend. So lots to get to, lots to break down. It's only one game, but I kind of want to push forward the conversation about stuff from that game and what the Pacers can do better, how good their best player can be this season, and look ahead at two key games this weekend because, you know, they let a game get away from them and they need to get back on track. They need to get back into the win column. We talked about how from that first game, right, you know, it's just one loss, right? It is just one loss. The Hornets are a decent team. They finished with the same record as the Hornets last year. You can kind of brush off a road loss. But when you blow a 23-point lead, that always stings. Any game with LeVert and Warren out that you can win, you really want to win. And because the Pacers' schedule starts off so brutal, just getting any win to keep your record looking good and keeping the perception about your team both internally and externally is huge. So this weekend, you know, recovering from that game, showing what this team can really be is really important. So talking about this weekend's games is really crucial. I want to start with Domantas Sabonis, though, because, you know, I kind of mentioned Monday when we were looking ahead at this week, Adam and I said, you know, we were talking about what are we going to see from the Pacers this week that, you know, we're going to learn about this team and this season and what this team could be. And I said, I want to see how Sabonis, just how good he can be early in the season. How can he set the tone? How can he show what he is doing better? And he's talked about his three ball getting better, and he's talked about this defensive scheme being a new defensive scheme that they have to learn and play, and Carlisle's lauded his defense. But how can he really be better? And I think that it might just be some low-hanging fruit kind of stuff, because Sabonis in the past, his big flaws have been turnovers. He can't really space out the floor very much, and a lot of his playmaking is kind of the easy playmaking. He makes some tough reads. He's brilliant in the pick and roll. I'm not belittling anything Sabonis does, but the ways he could get better were easily defensive stuff, cutting out some turnovers, and then spacing out the floor a little bit and just being, you know, a more dynamic and spaced out offensive player. And we saw against the Hornets, not a real shift in Sabonis that we've seen, but the way he was used was certainly different from the way that Bjorkgren and Nate McMillan used him. Carlisle already kind of changing the Domantas Sabonis playbook. And you can just look at his shot chart from that first game and immediately see it, right? Last year, Sabonis took, I had this stat right in front of me, and for some reason my page scrolled, but last season, Sabonis took 7.6% of his shots from 10 to 16 feet, and then 5.4% of his shots from 16 feet out to the three-point line. And he was okay at those shots, especially two seasons ago, but not so much last year. He hit him about one-third of the time. So not a good possession, but just like, okay, whatever possession. So in this first game against the Hornets, you just take a brief look at Sabonis' shot chart. He took two shots from farther out than 10 feet that were not three-pointers. You know, the buzzer beater was exactly 10 feet, but he took one shot from the right elbow and one shot kind of from the right wing. That was 13 feet, right? So of his 19 shot attempts, two of them were from the areas that he should not really be shooting from, because he's talked about that Carlisle has evolved his three-point game, right? Carlisle has told him and Turner, I want you guys to be shooting more threes, to be more dynamic, so that in this offensive scheme I have, where guys end up in different spots on every possession, where guys are moving a little bit more, you're making quicker decisions, I want you to just be able to be ready to let it fly at any given moment. And Sabonis worked on his three in the offseason. He took six in the first game. He made four. That's the most he's made in a Pacers jersey. It was the first game of the season. And then he cut out some of those shots from last year that, again, they're not like terrible, but they're not shots that you would encourage over the course of a game. And then inside, right around the rim, 2 and 1 feet, he didn't miss. He was a money around the basket. Plumlee could not stop him at all. PJ Washington couldn't slow him down much. And when the Hornets went on their big run, the Pacers went away from that. So this got me thinking, like, how good could Sabonis be this season if Carlisle really maximizes what he can be. If Sabonis is even just a 34% three-point shooter, 33, right? Below average, but good enough that he's a decent threat from out there, and he can mix in the pops, because let's change the player to talk about how valuable that is, right? I've been talking about with Miles Turner a lot this offseason. If he can add in a role to after his screens, that would make him harder to guard because he'd be more dynamic, right? Because he pops all the time. And so defenses kind of can hedge up a little higher, knowing that they are more likely to be running out to the three-point line after the big, after the screen, than running back to the rim. Well, the same can be said for Sabonis, but on the inverse, right? He's an excellent role man. You'd love to get Sabonis in short role situations and let him play make or let him drive or back someone down. But if he can also add in a pop, it has the same effect as Turner adding a role, where all of a sudden the defense has to think about how they're going to guard him after he sets a screen, because he could do so many things. So one low-hanging for his improvement was the three-pointer, because not only is, duh, floor spacing good, making three-pointers good, you also are adding in an element of unpredictability to your defense that Sabonis hasn't really had in years past. You know, he short-rolled and rolled a lot, and when he did pop, it was usually to go over and do a little pitch handoff play with someone else on the wing, and he barely did those plays, right? They went away from those a little more. He still does some stuff from the elbow, but it was less of the handoff stuff that he kind of got a lot of his assists from. So he's still going to be used in a way where I think his playmaking is valuable. He had a lot of opportunities to playmake, and he didn't really take advantage of them, right? You look at the stats, 2 assists, 6 turnovers, and you go, whoa, that's not good playmaking. And in a game you lose by one possession, you have 6 turnovers, you have to look at yourself in the mirror and go, okay, I could have been better. And I think Sabonis is a guy who will do that. He's always very self-critical of his skills, but you know, he's not going to get the same kind of assists he got last year. He'll have to get more of his assists in the playmaking variety from the elbows, actually making passes that throw guys open. Like, he can still hit the cutters, just some of those easy chippy assists won't be there. And then on the defensive end, the other place where his improvement could be noticeable from the past, I think that this defensive system that Carlisle has is easier for him. Carlisle lauded his defense in the preseason, but Sabonis, you know, last year was moving so much that I think he knows how to be mobile on defense, you know, and clearly you talk about this a lot with stars, or at least I have on this podcast, where guys who are really good offensively, right, and can manipulate a defense, you know, James Harden, Ben Simmons, Donovan Mitchell types, just those are not the best three in the league at it, just three names that came to my head, LeBron, Luka, whatever. Like, even if they're not awesome defenders, and Ben Simmons is, to be clear, they know where they're supposed to be because they can read the game in the same way on the other end of the floor, and that often makes them a good defender when the game is slowed down and they're trying, right? James Harden is an awesome post defender, things like that. If, you know, Sabonis can read the game really well on offense, and that translates to defense, he can always see what's happening, and sometimes he's just not quite quick enough to recover, or he doesn't have the verticality to get the block or whatever. But if he's in more of a system this year, now that he's like really established himself as a good pattern recognition player, as a good feel for the game kind of guy, if Carlisle puts him in a better system to be where he's supposed to be, or to not have to be so far from the basket all the time and be running around like a maniac, his defensive impact will go up substantially. We even saw him in, this is just the first game, I don't want to read into anything too much, but we even saw in this Hornets game that there were moments where he was guarding the big and Turner was out of the perimeter a little more. Now, Turner was often guarding the big, but it switched a little more often when they were both on the floor, which is interesting. And then when Sabonis is the lone center, obviously he is, you know, down low and banging bodies and stuff. So the low-hanging fruit, obvious stuff for Sabonis to get better this year, or to really show that he can dominate, right? And he still led the team in usage when he was in the game, 28.42 usage per the lovely PBPstats.com, takes play-by-play data and spits out all the stats. You know, him and Brogdon were the two leaders, but he was ahead of Brogdon by about 1%, right? He's still going to have the ball a lot, but I think that this interchangeable system that is focused on quick decisions and read and react, and, you know, like the setting up of plays that have cuts going by the ball, I think Sabonis can be very good at that. I think the shots Carlisle encourages, you know, Bjorkgren did this too, but he ran stuff through Sabonis in a way that he often got hot potatoed bad shots, or whatever you want to call those end of clock moments or dead play moments. That won't happen as much this year. So I think Sabonis getting better at the three, a scheme that is very good for him, and really one that benefits his teammates and takes the burden off of him to take those hot potato shots, and And he's in the first half, Carlisle really emphasized him backing guys down inside, and the defense is easier for him. I think Sabonis could have a career year very easily, just based off the evidence of one game, of course, so I might be overthinking things, but there's a chance he has a career year like in several non-assist, basically, stats. Like, his scoring could go up this year, his rebounding could go up this year, especially with an increased emphasis on offensive rebounding, and rebounding in general, it would appear from the Pacers. You know, the numbers don't really bear it out, and but they won the rebounding battle against the Hornets. They gave up some crucial offensive boards that kind of leave a bad taste in your mouth as a fan of okay, their rebounding might stink, but they really did okay over the course of the whole game. Just some very memorable possessions really sunk them. So I think this could be a year where Sabonis is even better than he was in the past, and Carlisle clearly values his skills, and he gets a lot out of guys, right? We've talked about that with him a lot this offseason. Is Carlisle's very good at getting a lot out of his best players, and Sabonis might be no different. This might be an opportunity for an all-star to launch his game up another tier, and I might be overreacting to one game, but I liked what I saw in terms of how Sabonis was deployed on both ends, and I think it's something that they can continue to go to all season long. He was excellent. The Pacers can lean on him all season long, right, in a way that, you know, it was possible last year, but we saw how good the solo Miles Turner minutes were last season. That was a hot topic on Locked On Pacers. Perhaps the solo Sabonis minutes could be the better ones this season, and the solo Sabonis minutes were the better ones in this first game. We'll always be looking at those numbers for the two center stuff. It's a very important thing for the future of this team. So now I want to talk about something Rick Carlisle mentioned after the game, something we talked about in the immediate reaction to the Hornets game. The Pacers rotation, only 8 guys, very surprising. How do they change that? What does that look like going into this weekend against the Wizards and Heat at 2 important games? But first, I want to talk to you guys about the good folks over at McDonald's, who have been proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's a place where friends and family can come to reconnect, a place where classmates can meet up for study groups, knowing they'll have dependable Wi-Fi and endless supplies of French fries and McFlurries. Win or lose, it's a place where teammates, competitors, and the home team or the away team can always come to recharge, and a place where you can look forward to stopping on your long road trip. Me and my mom used to go get McFlurries from McDonald's all the time when I was growing up, so that was always a positive family experience for me. And you can head to your local McDonald's and reconnect. You know, here from Locked On Pacers, I highly suggest it. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Let's talk about the Pacers rotation. Only 8 guys against the Hornets. Very, very surprising stuff. Like, I don't think anyone expected it to be like that. In the preseason, Carlisle was mixing and matching, and Isaiah Jackson was playing and surprising people, and O'Shea Brissett was sneaking in rotation minutes here and there, and Goga snuck in rotation minutes in the last game, and even Brad Wanamaker had a game where he was in the Pacers rotation. So to see the Pacers come out in game one with an 8-man rotation, look, I get that they were trying very hard to win that game, as they should, like I said, with their early season schedule and their injury situation. Perhaps chasing a few of these wins against the teams that are coin flip games is smart. Sure, I get why he went with 8 guys, but he even said after the game, Scott Agnes of Fieldhouse Files asked him this, you know, hey, what was up with choosing 8 guys? You know, that was surprising. And a lot of the complaints from fans last season was, hey, Malcolm Brogdon and Sabonis are playing 38 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever, in all these games. First game of the season, that happened again, right? So Scott asks, you know, what was the choice of that? And Rick said, wasn't really the plan per se. It just sort of happened that way, right? The game started, and the way he felt with the substitution patterns and what he was planning to do, he played 8 guys, and then he said, you know, over the weekend, I would probably expect that he would play more, right? So Carlisle plans on adding to that rotation. I think that is a big place to start with this is I would expect the rotation to be different tonight, even against Washington, tomorrow against Miami. I think the obvious thing is it will just expand. So how does it change? How does it expand? And what does he see on the film that makes him tweak stuff? Because, like, he's not stupid, right? He saw what we saw from Jeremy Lin. The defense was really bad. The offense was honestly really bad. The rebounding from him, the closeouts, it was like the quintessential bad Jeremy Lin game. You know, when his offense is working, you love to watch him. He's a team savior. But when his offense isn't there, it's oof, right? So what did Carlisle see that he wants to shake up when he talks about the rotation? Does he want to expand it? Does he want to give more Turner minutes? You know, he talked about Turner's fouls being a reason he only played 26 minutes. In the fourth quarter, he could have been valuable. So what does that look like? And I think we have some idea from the preseason, but there are pros and cons to, I think, several guys sneaking into the rotation. So I want to talk about the options Carlisle could have. I think the most likely guy to sneak a few minutes or to be that ninth guy that cuts into other minutes is Isaiah Jackson, mostly going off of preseason rotation choices here. But Carlisle has talked about him very positively, very often, right? And so have other players on the team who are like, I've never seen a rookie being able to guard so many positions and play such good defense. And they've experimented with him at the four and five for situations like this where they can get him into the game playing in more situations, right? So he seems like a guy they could go to. And situationally, honestly, against the Hornets, I can't think of a time where, you know, you think, oh, he was the matchup piece they were missing, you know, tactically. The time I suggested on yesterday's show they could have gone to Isaiah is in that third quarter run that was so brutal for the Pacers where they were just getting smoked. Put your rookie, your energy guy, your defense guy in there. See if he can't snag a rebound, that one of these other guys can't. See if he can't block a shot that someone else can't reach. See if his energy and his athleticism can change the game in a way that this dry spell can't be stopped by the guys you have in the game. That would have been a good time to see him. And I think against Washington, who won't have Achimura still as he works his way back, and we'll talk more about the injury report for that game later. But, you know, I think he could sneak in against them, no problem. There's not going to be any matchups that are too brutal for him. I think his energy could be good against a team like Washington, who has a ton of guys who can move the ball and make plays. Now that they traded away Russ, they have a lot of guys who can do it instead of just one who can do it at a high level. And the Heat are kind of a similar way. They have quite a few guys who can make good plays. So Isaiah is a good idea to me as a guy who could sneak in more minutes and potentially change the game in a way that the rotation the Pacers used against Charlotte couldn't do. The other one is O'Shea, who, for you YouTube commenters who keep saying that I talk about him being 23 years old too often, the youthful O'Shea Brissett could be a good choice. And I've talked about him playing more very often, right? He's good. He is actually good. And that's most of the reason I've been harping on him playing so much, is he can shoot it a little bit too. And I think against the Hornets, they shot okay from three, but they're, you know, the guys they were playing at the four off the bench, Torrey Craig, 1-for-4 from deep, Justin Holiday, 1-for-7, Jeremy Lamb, 1-for-6. Those guys combined to go 3-for-17 from deep. Can Brissett be worse than that? You know, maybe try to sneak him in a few minutes to see what his three ball can do, see what his newly found tighter handled dribble game can do. And his defense is also valuable, right? In moments where Miles Bridges and Gordon Hayward are both out there wrecking havoc on your defense, maybe try to get O'Shea in for Jeremy Lamb for a few minutes. Maybe he can be your ninth guy because he has that two-way potential to be really helpful for your team. And I know it's tough when you're playing Sabonis as much as you do, if you're Carlisle, to call another front court player in. That's another downside for Isaiah Jackson, but I think that it has value in the moments where Turner's the lone center to try to sneak in a four who can kind of have some two-way versatility or has a strength that Lamb or Holiday or even Craig don't have. And I think it's most likely that if Carlisle does expand to 9 or 10 guys against Washington, that it will be one of those two, Brissett or Jackson, who is the beneficiary of more minutes. It's the most obvious fit. I mean, the three guys they played off the bench, McConnell, Lamb, and Craig, you could argue are a 1, a 2, and a 3, right? So they had to play 4 or 5 where it was just Turner, Sabonis, and then occasionally, you know, I think they had Holiday, Craig in for a little bit, and Lamb, Holiday, and McConnell, Brogdon in for a little bit. But it was a lot of the two big stuff, or one of the bigs plus, you know, Justin Holiday or Craig, right? Whereas they could get an actual natural, more natural four in with one of those two guys. So that seems like the most likely two. Goga could be an option for 5 minutes, and we're gonna. It seems like that's gonna be a topic on this show all season, right? How can they find Goga minutes? What is his situation in his third year? I didn't expect him to be in the rotation after preseason, but they have to try to find a way to boost his value or to do something with him that isn't just riding the bench in his third NBA season. And again, he's got a rookie option coming up due in 10 days, so they got to figure something out there. I don't think he'll be the guy. He's one of the four that I guess if he played, it wouldn't stun me. But the last one is Brad Wanamaker. I wanted to bring up him a little bit. I don't think he could be a guy that would sneak in to play, but because he can play the two, we saw him play with McConnell in preseason just a little bit. That gives him just enough lineup versatility that you could bump up Lamb a position, bump up Craig a position with your second unit. Voila, you have Craig, who is pretty good at the four, a more natural four than either big, obviously. And I think a more natural four than Justin Holiday, too. Having him be your four with the bench with Lamb Wanamaker, not ideal. That's a pretty small group in general and lacks some punch. But it would be maybe preferable to, you know, burning through eight guys and making Malcolm Brogdon play 40 minutes in the first couple games of the regular season, in the first two games. I think if you can sneak Brad Wanamaker in to save some of Brogdon's minutes, that would be another way to make the rotation seem a little more free and loose, get some more looks out there, get some more team in. So I think the most likely way we'll see Carlisle kind of change what he did strategically will be either O'Shea Brissett or Isaiah Jackson. More than likely to me, Isaiah Jackson, though I could see him choosing either of those guys. But it's not impossible that, you know, Goga steals a few minutes or Brad Wanamaker steals a few minutes. We'll have to see. Carlisle is smart and innovative, and he got a lot, again, I don't want to beat this to death, but he's gotten a lot out of guys like this in his career, right? Not the youth guys necessarily, but the slightly established vets who are good at some stuff and not nearly as good at other stuff. He gets a lot out of them compared to other coaches. So I think whoever he uses, you have to let him justify his choices over a few games. But I think he does need to change the rotation. Eight is too small for a regular season game, especially for a team with a lot of depth. And I know they have some injuries, but you know, it's not like O'Shea Brissett isn't an NBA quality rotation player, for example, or playing your 18-year-old rookie, 19-year-old rookie is always justifiable in some way. So I think he needs to expand the rotation. That maybe not alter the lineups too much, but just expand the rotation, get some new looks and new blood into the game for these games over the weekend. And speaking of these games over the weekend, let's talk about them. Pacers, Wizards, Pacers, Heat, two big ones. So let's do it. But first, I got to talk to you guys about the great folks over at Built Bar, because Built Bar is making the best tasting protein bars ever. I tried their new pumpkin one that came to me for Halloween, and it was delicious, as all of them are. Every Built Bar is 100% covered in chocolate and delicious, and they have a flavor for everybody. There's so many ridiculously good flavors that I could talk this whole ad read about my favorites, but I love the cookie dough one. I love the cookies and cream. I love the peanut butter brownie. You can get a mixed package where they have like nine of their more popular flavors all in one if you want to try a bunch, or you can get individual boxes for a bunch of one flavor. That's what I just did with the blueberry muffins. So you got to try them all out. And not only are Built Bars delicious, they're healthy too. They can be used perfectly for a meal supplement or just, you know, along with the meal as a snack or something. But 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories ranging from 130 to 180, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy, and the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team, which is pretty sweet. Go check them out, built.com. Use the promo code LOCKED1515. You'll get 15% off your order. That is LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. All right. Pacers, Wizards, Pacers, Heat this weekend. Two teams that have looked better than the Pacers to start the season. The Heat absolutely stomped the Milwaukee Bucks in the name of revenge just a few hours before this recording. The Wizards handled the Raptors in Toronto to open their season. A lot of injured guys for the Raptors. That team's not looking too hot right now. That said, the Heat win was impressive. Giannis did play, and he only had 15 points. So maybe the Heat are really dangerous. Let's start with the Wizards, though. And first of all, a fun storyline from this game that somehow totally spaced me until media sessions on Thursday when Justin Holiday was talking after shoot-around. We get to see Justin Holiday versus Aaron for the first time since Aaron Holiday was traded to Washington in the giant Russell Westbrook trade. The Pacers netted Isaiah Jackson in that deal. But I completely forgot about that. That will be very cool to see those guys against each other for the first time. Cool to see Aaron try to prove himself against his former team for the first time. In his first game with the Wizards, he had three rebounds, 0 assists, 0 points. So I don't think it went super well. Howell Neto ended up playing more minutes than he did, but we'll see. It was his first game with a new team. We'll see what kind of impact he can have. But the Wizards are interesting. The injury report for this game is like laughably huge for both teams. Still, I decided not to load as I tried to open it for you guys. But Bradley Beal is questionable. That's the big one on the Pacers side. Similar deal to the first game. Lamb is questionable. Holiday is questionable, and Torrey Craig is questionable with a shoulder injury as well. Same three guys out as the first game for the Pacers. There's other guys out for the Wizards, Rui Hachimura, like I said, and some other injuries for them, but I can't pull it all up. But Beal is questionable. That's a big one. If he can't go, I mean, they might be sunk. He had 23 against the Raptors, and then Montrezl Harrell had 22. No one else had more than 13, right? So they only scored 98. Their offense was pretty lackluster, but their defense was good. Where is that for the Washington Wizards? I don't want to harp too much on any one game to really break down a team. We can't, like, next week we'll start having guests on who cover the team the Pacers are playing to get a more clear perspective of what to expect in those games. It's way too early in the season to get any great perspective from that kind of stuff, but the Wizards are a totally different team than the one that totally smashed the Pacers four or five times last season. You know, Russell Westbrook had some just absurd games. Absurd 20 rebound, 20 assist games against the Pacers. 40 points, 30 something points, and 20 rebound. He was insane. They had no answer for him. Bjorkgren's coverages made his life so easy. His speed was too much for Brogdon. He's no longer a part of the Wizards. They are a totally different team. They started Kuzma, Caldwell Pope, Gafford, and Dinwiddie against the Raptors. I don't think any of those guys started very often for the Wizards last season. Montrezl Harrell off the bench is new for them. Aaron Holiday off the bench is new for them. They're a totally different team. So getting a good feel on what they can be is interesting. Kuzma gives them an interesting dimension. He had 15 rebounds against the Raptors. He gives them a new dimension on the wing they haven't had in a while, really. Otto Porter's the last guy for them that could kind of put it on the floor from the wing. Caldwell Pope is the same way. So that adds some stuff around Beal that I think is interesting. And Dinwiddie's got some punch at point guard. You know, they've had Wall and Russ for forever. But to now still have some punch, but have altered your team in a big way, I think makes the Wizards, to be more dangerous. I think they can spread it out around Beal more, and then all their bench guys are really solid. So this isn't the Wizards that we all used to know, where, you know, two guys dominate the show and one of their role guys steps up and they win, or one doesn't and they lose. And now it's, you know, any of their guys could be good on any given day beyond Beal. So they're a little harder to guard to me. And I think that this will be a big game to watch for Chris Duarte. You know, we talked about how huge he was in his first game against the Hornets. Sure, he was also not matched up against particularly tough defensive matchups all game. Kelly Oubre is one of my least favorite players to watch in the NBA. Duarte did okay defending him, and Ish Smith played okay for the Hornets as well, but again, not a ridiculously tough matchup. Like, no one Duarte had to contain was so awesome for extended time. He guarded some guys in individual possessions. The Wizards, meanwhile, could throw, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie in his way, or Bradley Beal, or Howell Neto. Guys, I mean, Neto's not that convincingly good, but this will be a game where Duarte, you really get to see what he can do on the defensive end against a decent team. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he can carry over momentum from his first game into the second game. And if he can put up a good defensive game, even if his offense is weaker, that might be more important for the Pacers, because as interesting as this Wizard team is, and as much as they can spread it out, their defense should still suck, right? Like, Dinwiddie's appropriate, I guess, and Caldwell Pope's a decent defender, but Kuzma's not a good defender. Gafford is not that great yet. I think he will be, but he's not yet. Beal never tries on defense. Harrell's overrated on defense. None of their bench guys are good on defense, right? So if Duarte can put up some stuff and be strong on that end, I think you can see the Pacers score a lot of points and keep up with this Wizards team. And it's kind of important that they play well after that terrible third quarter against the Hornets. I think they can do well, and Sabonis should have no problem punking Gafford still, so they'll have a way to get advantages if they need to. And the second unit will be crucial in this one as well. The second unit for the Pacers was not good against the Hornets. How can they do better against a rickety and new Wizards unit will be important, especially if they expand their rotation. So it's hard to predict wins and losses this early in the season. I have no idea what to think, but we'll see how the Pacers respond to that terrible third quarter against the Hornets and near comeback win still. And then their first big test of the season comes the very next night at home for the home opener against the Miami Heat, or apparently, their offseason was just ridiculous, right? They had one of the best summers in the NBA, getting Kyle Lowry, getting PJ Tucker, extending Duncan Robinson. They add to their bench with Markieff Morris and keep Dwayne Dedmon. And yeah, they're good. They're going to be pretty good. I still think their depth's a little weak, but their top end talent, undeniably good, right? So the Heat are going to be a big test for the Pacers, their first big test of the season. And home openers, they change the dynamic of games a little bit. We saw for the Pacers when they played the Bucks in, I don't know if it was, it's not a new arena, but it was the newly named and renovated Fiserv Forum for them in Milwaukee, I think, for their home opener a few years ago, and the Bucks just rolled the Pacers off the floor. Perhaps the new Gainbridge Fieldhouse and it being a home opener could give the Pacers some sort of benefit in this game, but the Heat are just mega talented, right? Jimmy Butler always does well against the Pacers. He's the kind of guy they haven't had an answer for roster-wise for a while, basically since Warren got hurt. It'll be up to Craig to try to slow him down, and Kyle Lowry has always done well against the Pacers. Six assists, easy six assists for him. He only had to play 24 minutes tonight against Milwaukee, so he's going to be a big threat for them. Duncan Robinson only seems to wiggle free for a few shots, and Tyler Hero had 27. Perhaps bubble Tyler Hero, who destroyed the Pacers in the playoffs, could be back for this Heat team. So they just have weapons that the Pacers don't have answers for. Bam Adebayo loves to play Miles Turner after the Team USA snub he had a few summers ago, right? So this is a really, not only are the Heat good, but the way they've changed their team makes them a really tough matchup for this game and for the whole season, right? They don't have answers for Jimmy, and they haven't for a while. But now that Bam can't really, like, he's, him and Sabonis are about equals, and he loves to punk Turner. But now that the Bam neutralization doesn't matter as much because Lowry's in there and can set everybody up better, it's tough for the Pacers. I mean, they get beat at so many positions by stars, and the Heat actually have a capable bench now that the matchups are just tough, right? They're not going to have good answers for Lowry. He's just quick enough to punish Brogdon's slow lateral foot speed. Again, Butler's always killed them. Bam always gets up to play them. The way they've gotten advantages in the past was guys like Doug McDermott. They didn't have good answers for guys like Dougie McBuckets or Caris LeVert, I believe, had a big game against the Heat last year. And that could still be an option. Not Caris specifically. He's not going to play in this game. But perhaps Duarte could wiggle free from Duncan Robinson. But now that they have P.J. Tucker, you know, none of those big Doug McDermott games or big bench games will be as valuable. This could be a big T.J. McConnell game, though. The second unit defense for the Heat is not going to be one of their strong suits this season. They'll be a good defensive team always. Spoelstra teams always are. But this could be a big McConnell game, a chance for him to really put his imprint on this team and get that second unit running. But I think the Heat are just a terrible matchup for the Pacers. So it's a good prove-it opportunity for them against a good Miami team to show what they're made of and show where they stack up in the East. You know, losing to the Hornets doesn't make you think too much of the team right now, but it's one game. You know, if you beat the Heat, all of a sudden everybody forgets about that game and looks ahead. So we'll see. They look pretty deep and talented to me when I look at this Miami team. Deadman's been awesome for them since joining them. He had 13-9 in 15 minutes in the first game of this season, right? So maybe the Pacers won't get many advantages on the inside, and that's where they dominated against Charlotte. So they're gonna have to find another way. It might be on the guards, it might be on whoever PJ Tucker's guarding to really ruin his impact. But that's gonna be a tough game for the Pacers. Winning two would be great, and we talked about how 2-1 would be a successful week for the Pacers, and one's probably more expected. They really need to win one of these games. I think they can do it. Will they do it? We'll see. But I believe in Carlisle's ability to assess weaknesses from one game and resolve them for the next one. So we'll see what happens. And of course, we'll be right here on Locked On Pacers to break it down. Come Monday next week, we'll talk about all the weekend's action. We'll look at their upcoming game against Milwaukee and really their week coming up. Adam is on vacation, I believe, next week. He's in Cincinnati in Arizona. He's just a world traveler. So mostly me and some guests next week. Should be really fun as we really get in to the meat of the season. And by the meat of the season, I mean like the second, third, and fourth game. So maybe not quite the meat, but of course we'll have it here on the Locked On Pacers podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Have a great weekend, and we will see you on Monday.